Hi, and welcome to Speaking of Sex. I'm Chris from PleasureMechanics.com, and in this episode, we'll be speaking with Rachel Kramer Bussell. She's a sex writer and an editor of over 40 volumes of erotica. Most recently, she edited Best Sex Writing 2013, an anthology of nonfiction sex writing about sexuality and culture. Rachel was only available for interview on a Sunday, and so in the background of some of the podcast, you'll hear the roar of lawnmowers and edge trimmers from our sunny village here in New York. We apologize for the extra sound, but perhaps you can just think about it as a giant vibrator going off in the distance. We hope you enjoy our interview with Rachel Kramer Bussell. So we're thrilled to be speaking with you today, Rachel. Hello.
Thank you.
So can you tell us a little bit about, normally you edit anthologies of erotica fiction, and these books are a little different in that they're nonfiction. So how do you think about that process of putting together an anthology of nonfiction?
It's fairly different. I mean, even though they're both editing anthologies, and I would say one of the biggest bits of feedback I get is people thinking it's going to be erotica. Like they see the word sex and maybe they know Cleus Press or they know me and they open it and, or they read it and they're like, this is not erotica. And they're kind of upset. And to me, it's funny because I'm like, but I have 40 other books of erotica. You could pick those up very easily. They say erotica or erotic stories. But I think that there's not really a lot of books out there like this. I mean, there might be full-length books about a specific sexual topic, but there's not that tradition of anthologies about just sex culture, sex sexuality. So I think that sometimes trips people up. And I think there's some overlap. Like I've gotten plenty of feedback from erotica readers and erotica writers who appreciate this kind of book. But I also think that there's a different kind of audience who may or may not read erotica for fun, but who are either, you know, working in sexuality or just interested in the topic. And I try to find pieces that are not too academic, for lack of a better word, like that anyone could pick up without ever having read any of, you know, the dozens of books or hundreds of books about sex that I've read, and find something that would speak to them. And I really want it, that's probably the most important thing to me, that this speak to both people within the sex world, but also people who maybe have never heard of some of the topics even that are being discussed, like who might not know some of the terminology or might have never thought about what is it like to be a sex worker or what is it like to be a bisexual man, or, you know, and I kind of want this to be not necessarily a 101, but just an introduction to that world, but also an intelligent commentary on what's going on. You know, I don't expect people to read it and say, I agreed with everything everyone wrote 100%. I hope that it provokes conversation and sort of starts a conversation.
Yeah, I think you're really successful in the book of creating a kind of buffet of sexual options and sexual ideas to think about. And in one of your introduction paragraphs, you talk about how you hope people take this book and then start conversations within their communities, within their relationships. Why do you think it's so important to talk about sex? I mean, I think you and I as sex professionals know this, but a lot of people don't talk about sex with their friends, with their community members. What power does that conversation have?
I mean, I think that just starting that conversation, and whatever that is, like there's no specific script, just sort of lets people know that other people are dealing with something. You know, I think that, you know, no one's just like knows everything about sex or knows or is. And I think it's also this idea that whatever age you are, I mean, whether you're 18 or younger or 80, like your sexuality doesn't just end, or it's not just one thing. I think that sometimes we have this idea in our culture that once you've kind of figured out your sexuality, whether that's your sexual orientation or what you're into, then that's just fixed over your whole life. And I don't think that's true. I mean, maybe that is true for some people in general, but I still think your brain and your body and your ideas and whatever, I mean, are still growing. And I think that I would say almost everyone could learn something about either themselves and or the other person by bringing up that conversation. I think it can be hard, though. I mean, there's not, you know, sometimes your coworker, you don't necessarily want to know what they were doing, you know, in bed last night. But I also think that that's not the only conversation about sex that we can have. And that's, I think, something that people sort of think, oh, well, you must be talking about your sex life all the time. And I think that's something that the book addresses, even when people are writing first person pieces. It's not necessarily a diary of I did this, 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 and this, and this is my every sexual impulse ever. Like, there's no specific amount you have to share. But I also think sex is in the news, sex is in our culture. I mean, whether it's, you know, same-sex marriage or, you know, condoms and porn, or some of the issues are addressed in the book and some aren't, but there's sex in the news every day. And I think also, I hope that the book, the series, kind of breaks down this idea that sex is this private topic, because even if your own sexuality is relatively private, sex still exists in the public sphere, you know? So I think that when you bring it up, you might be bringing up something that's happening in the news or something that you're curious, like, what do you think about this topic? And I'm sure that anyone bringing that up with someone they've never discussed these things before with will learn something, you know, and you might learn something not necessarily positive, but I think that's still an interesting conversation to have. And I think that sometimes we're so afraid of what someone else might think that we don't bring it up. And to me, one of the best parts of my job, just overall writing about sex and editing books about it and being fairly public about that, is that I do get to have those conversations with all sorts of people that I wouldn't necessarily have. Like, I was on an airplane coming home from London, and there was one seat in the middle, and then there was a guy sitting on the other side of me. And I'm 37, and he was exactly twice my age, 74. And we wound up, he was like, I want to trade books with you. So I gave him my book, and it turned out to have a postcard from one of my books in it. And he said, oh, what's this? And I said, oh, I edit erotica. And then we had this amazing conversation about his life and erotica. And he was asking me for recommendations about erotica, about people his age. And we were just having this fascinating discussion that we never would have had.
Yeah, I find that so often when we get over the initial shame and embarrassment about talking about sex, the people we talk to are so relieved to finally have someone to have open and honest conversation with that it all comes out and people have really intimate conversations with near strangers. Yeah. When you present yourself as someone who's safe and comfortable to talk about these things with.
I mean, sometimes that I don't personally always want to have that conversation, but I do think it's really interesting. And it does show that a lot of people don't have someone or more than one person to have that conversation with. And I think that often maybe the only person they're having that conversation with is with their intimate partner. And I think that, you know, then you're still only getting one person's perspective on these things. And really, it's a broader topic.
Definitely. And I think this book and books like this can also create a lot of compassion when you read someone's writing and you're brought into a sexuality and a sexual community that's not your own, and yet find something you identify with. It can be really heart-opening and mind-opening. I'm thinking about Madison Young's essay on being a submissive and a mother, and curious about how many women read that and identify something of their experience as a mother that they never thought about as being, you know, submissive to this tiny little dominant sucking on their breasts. And I think it can help us think about our sexualities in new ways by exposing ourselves to people we'd never encounter in our own dating life or personal life.
And I think, you know, when you were saying that, it reminded me, and I don't know their names, but the Republican politicians whose son came out and then, you know, changed their vote on gay marriage. Like, I think that on the one hand, you know, you shouldn't have to have a personal family connection to something to have an informed view of it. But I do think that that's a very real thing. I mean, if someone you know or someone you read about whose voice speaks to you, if you can relate to that on a personal level, I do think that impact is, you know, the whole personal is political. I think that that's how people start to think about things. I mean, they don't just think about things as issues or topics, but they think about it as human, you know, values and humanity and how that plays out in people's real lives. And I think that those pieces especially the first person essays in the book, speak to those things that people might not have ever thought about. And so that's part of why I selected those, because I think they, if someone gives it a chance, even if they're not necessarily, you know, might be going into it thinking, oh, well, I don't know about this. And I think that even now, I mean, I think one of the things 50 Shades of Grey's success has done is brought the topic of BDSM into the public sphere. A lot of the media around it has been, you know, I'm thinking of the Newsweek cover story that basically said, oh, well, women are powerful in the workplace, but in the bedroom want to submit, and that's this setback for feminism. And to me, that's such a misreading of submission and the book's popularity. I mean, it's just the misreading of a lot of things. But I think that having that conversation in these very public, big media spaces is important, you know, because I think then it at least lets people know, well, there's people out there doing this and thinking about this and doing it in different ways. I mean, I just hope that we're kind of getting to a point where what I don't want is people to read, say, one of those essays and think, well, everyone who does this thinks like this. Because I think that's sort of one of the downsides of, if you want to call it identity politics or a movement based around people's identity. I mean, you're still a person. Like, you still have your own individual thoughts and feelings. And maybe you identify as X, Y, or Z, but that doesn't mean that everyone who identifies as X, Y, or Z is like you. I mean, maybe they're nothing like you. Maybe, like, we're both, like, I'm bisexual. Maybe someone else is bisexual, but maybe everything else about our lives is totally different, and that's okay. But I think that often in the media, I mean, especially around the issue of BDSM, people want to conflate everyone who does X and identifies as X as, well, you're all like this. And, you know, that's just not true. But I think because we don't have, you know, so many public figures who are coming out as, say, kinky, you know, we don't have that many people to point to say, oh, well, different people do different things and think different things.
And I think that's one of the powerful things about anthologies in general. And one of the things you do so well is you'll organize an anthology around a theme like hotel sex or female dominance, and then present so many different perspectives around that theme that if someone's curious about it and start fantasizing about something, they can read an anthology and get, again, this huge spectrum of options that they can be inspired by.
I mean, that's one of the things I love about editing, is that I would never, even if I wrote 20 stories about spanking, say, maybe they'd be varied, but I don't think they would ever be as varied as what 20 different people could come up with. And to me, that's important, because, like, say spanking, which is something I'm into, but people are into it for a different reasons and go about it different ways. Like, for some people, the focus is on the physical, you know, pleasure, pain, you know, that part of it. And some people it's the psychological, and some people it's combination. And I think the same could be said for bondage or for any of these things. And also, for some people, it is more of a lifestyle, and it's related to their whole relationship. And for some people, you know, it's something maybe they do on the side. I mean, I just think there's so much variety around really any sexual topic. I mean, even if you took a really more focused fetish, if you say foot fetish, there's different kind of foot fetishes. And I think that, going back to the 50 Shades thing, I mean, I think a lot of the media made this really simplistic assumption that if you are turned on or interested in a fan of those books, then you immediately, that means you're kinky. That means you're submissive. You want to be Anastasia. Like, maybe you're just into the story, or maybe it sparked a fantasy. I think there's a place for reading as pleasure and fantasy and escape. And maybe it turns you on to new ideas in the bedroom, but I just don't think that equation is so straightforward. Like, read this, immediately become like the person you're reading about, or we would all be, I'd be a murderer, you know?
Right. Here at Pleasure Mechanics, we really try to make the differentiation between fantasy and desire. Fantasy being the realm of erotic imagination, where anything is possible. And, you know, you can be the underwater mermaid fucking an octopus. And desire being a craving for a real life experience. and they inform each other. But fantasy is this opportunity to have a sexuality with no bounds, no limitations. And erotica is such perfect fuel for fantasies. So when we run into people who say, I just don't know what I want in bed, I have no desires, you know, they need to tap into their erotic fantasy world. And we often recommend starting with reading erotica, even over watching porn, because you can fill in your own story, you can create mental imagery and see what turns you on.
I love that distinction, because I think that we don't, as in the general culture, that distinction often gets conflated. So people think that, well, if I have a fantasy about X, that means I must want to do that right away. And I think that sometimes hinders that communication, especially with lovers, because you think, well, if I say I'm thinking about wanting to be tied up or spanked or whatever it is, or something else, then, you know, you think that they're hearing, let's try this immediately. And maybe you're not quite there yet. And I think that we need a space for those kinds of conversations, both within relationships and just, you know, amongst friends or whoever you're talking to, where you can say, I'm thinking about this. I'm not sure if I want to try it. Because I think that plenty of people have fantasies that aren't desires, you know, that, and I think that we do a disservice to fantasies when we assume that they all have to come true. And I'm actually editing right now an anthology about female fantasy erotica. And the deadline is July 1st. The guidelines are on my website if you want to write something. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how people push that boundary. Because I think, you know, most people probably have fantasies that probably they wouldn't want to, either wouldn't or couldn't fulfill. And I think those are some of the hottest fantasies. But if you don't let yourself go there mentally because you're afraid, oh, well, that means X, Y, or Z about me, then I think that's a shame. Like, I think we need to create more space for those fantasies.
Right. We can enjoy going to an action movie and seeing buildings blown up and people shot down. And we don't worry about what that means about us. But as soon as it's a sexual fantasy, we have a lot of moral judgment about it. And one of the things we're trying to encourage is people to be more permissive in the realm of sexual fantasy and let themselves get a little more free in that realm. And then try to extract what desires are real for them and what they want to create in their bedroom.
And I think that sometimes, I don't really know how to, I don't want to say this incorrectly, but where like sexual labels can be a detriment, because I think that sometimes people think, well, if I fantasize, like if I'm a woman and I'm with a man and I fantasize about sex with a woman, I'm bisexual. I mean, maybe you are, but to me, like whatever label you choose, it's sort of less important. I mean, not that labels aren't important, but in that realm, the label is less important than being free to think about where does your fantasy lie? Like, is it just the fantasy? Is it combined with desire? Would it be maybe you want to act on it in a specific situation? And I think that sometimes because we don't have those clear boundaries around, you know, it's okay to have a fantasy, we think that like you can't have boundaries around what you're, you know, if you do want to try something, like if I want to try spanking, I'm going to like go from just like hand spanking to, you know, being caned or something. I mean, I think that sometimes because there's not as much general education around certain, especially some of these topics, people think, well, there's no sort of beginner baby steps in inching towards some of these things in real life. So if I say, yes, I want to go to a play party, that means I'm, you know, agreeing to do everything and everything, you know, anything and everything. And I think that, you know, not everyone thinks that, but I do think that sometimes people are afraid to even take baby steps in terms of acting out those desires because they think that there's no middle ground. You know what I mean?
Totally. And I'm now thinking about one of the baby steps I think that is amazing for people is attending a sexual event that's not a sex party. And I'm thinking about all of the erotica readings that you've hosted. And I'm curious, what role do you think having an erotica reading where you're sharing stories in public and listening to people read, what role does that have versus reading the anthology at home in your bed?
You know, it's funny because when I started doing my former reading series in the flesh, I didn't really think of it so much as a space, the sex positive space. I thought of it as more of an entertainment. I thought of more the reading element as opposed to the erotic element. But I think that it did create this space where people could hear sexy stories and sometimes get turned on in a safe way. You know, there's like, I would have sometimes people ask me, oh, is there nudity? And I'm like, no, it's at a bar. It's a reading, but the topic is sexuality. And I think that spaces like that or munches or just sort of parties or events where it's not explicitly sexual, like, you know, there's not sexual activity happening, can be a way to acknowledge that people are interested in this and that there's other people interested in it, and but that aren't necessarily going to be hitting on you or, you know, and I think that, you know, we don't have so many spaces in our culture for those kinds of things. Like, I think I would love it if there's more of that, because I think that that also helps just, I was going to say educate. I don't really know if educate's the right word, but just let people know that there are spaces like that and that talking about these things is normal.
I think there's a real effect of dissolving shame in attending sex events like that. And when you can allow yourself to be a little bit turned on in public and the world doesn't end, a lot of shame gets left behind at those bars. And I think that's a really positive thing. One of the lines in your book, you said, you know, no matter how old I get, I still always am learning about sexuality. What is something you've learned recently in the past year or so?
That's a tough question. I mean, I think what's interesting for me on a personal level is just realizing that every time I think I kind of know myself, something changes. And in a way, like the more, I guess, stable it is, like right now I'm in a relationship and I'm moving in with my partner. So, you know, that's pretty stable. And I sort of assumed, oh, well, then, you know, my sexuality would be the same throughout, or will sort of not, I don't even know what word I want, just, I guess, not change that much. But even within a relationship where you're with one person, your sexuality can change and their sexuality can change. And that exchange can actually foster more exploration, both in the fantasy realm and the desire realm. And I think that for me, that's just a really good reality check to realize, you know, I don't know everything even about my own sexuality. And certainly I don't know everything about other people's sexuality. And, you know, I'm always interested in, you know, reading about both erotica and real people's stories, because I think it's fascinating. And I was telling this editor, Delilah Devlin, she's also a romance writer. She was editing this book, Smoking Hot Firemen, that's coming out. And I was trying to write a story for it. I was like, I don't know anything about firemen. Like, I don't really get this fetish. It's just not my thing. But I was researching. I was like, but I want to push myself. And I was Googling and I found this. I don't know if this was real or what, but this guy wrote in for advice. Like, and he was saying, my wife keeps setting fires to try to get firemen to come to the house. And I was so fascinated by that. And I was like, I'm going to steal that and borrow that as a story. But like, I thought there were so many levels to that. Is even something simple as that, like, is it the wife is bored with the husband and wants, like, just wants sort of eye candy, or does she want to hook up with the fireman? I mean, I just thought that was so interesting. And that's the kind of thing that I feel like, I don't know, like, I was like, oh, maybe I could eroticize something that I don't know that much about personally. So and I think that, you know, everyone can, you know, learn about themselves. Like, I don't think just, you know, whether you're single or you're not single or whatever, I mean, you can always learn about yourself. And I think also learning about your partner and creating an open dialogue, like room to discuss whatever comes up within the relationship. Because I do think that sometimes the longer you're with someone, the harder it can be to bring up something that maybe, you know, say you're in a relationship for 5 years and maybe something has just come up for you that you, it's not like you've been hiding it for 5 years, but something new is, you know, you're curious about. I think sometimes that can be more challenging, because it's like, well, how do you broach a new topic when you seem like, oh, but don't they know everything about you? I don't think you even know everything about you, you know?
Yeah, you must have to really cultivate a sense of curiosity in your job. And I think we can all benefit from having more of a spirit of curiosity around our sexuality, our partner's sexuality. and kind of go into each as if it's a new chapter in an anthology of what will I discover now. And
I think also, you know, you said shame earlier, like I think just checking ourselves for our own judgments. I mean, because I think even, you know, I would like to think that I'm super non-judgmental, but I mean, I think we all have certain maybe knee-jerk judgments or ideas. And I think like, it's okay to acknowledge that and then push past that and say, well, what about this makes me uncomfortable? Or what about this is, and it doesn't mean like you have to personally do everything. I mean, I think that's the other thing that people kind of confuse about being non-judgmental. Doesn't mean that you personally have to try everything. You know, maybe, you know, if you know what you're into, like, that's great. It's just that like, you can't then take that and say, well, everyone should be into what I'm into. Or if you're not into what I'm into, then there's something wrong with you. And I see that even in, I would say, alternative spaces sometimes. This idea that I know what's best for you. And I don't think anyone knows what's best for someone else.
Right. So you've been in the sex field for a long time. And you kind of keep track of a lot of the pulse of sex culture. What do you predict is just on the horizon for global sex culture?
Well, that's a big question. I don't know if I can answer that. I'm not sure. I mean, I think we're seeing more people becoming comfortable opening up about their sexuality, whether anonymously online or through kind of community groups facilitated online and, you know, starting sex blogs. Like, I think that comfort level, we're going to see more of, like, just expanding. And when we were talking earlier about community events, I was thinking of this event I went to on Long Island for E.L. James and 50 Shades of Grey. And there were women there, and it was almost all women, who were reading an erotic book for the first time. But what really struck me was that they were sharing it with their friends. They were telling their like husbands, oh, I'm reading this sexy book. And it became this like bonding thing. I mean, I met a woman who was buying it for her friends. And she said, I think they need to read it. And that to me was really fascinating. This idea that, I mean, I didn't say, why do they need to read it? I don't know if she meant like they needed help or something. But I think the idea that you'd be looking out for your friends in the sense of, maybe they could learn something or maybe this could help their relationship was really fascinating to me. And I think that the ongoing conversation around it, you know, as much, you know, humor as there's been around 50 Shades and sort of flack it's gotten, I think it's had this really also global impact. I mean, I've seen it in other countries, including Dubai, where you don't necessarily think you're going to find a book like that. And I think just the presence of it, and people knowing, you know, the general story, even if they haven't read it, to me signals that we're ready to start having those kinds of conversations. And I think like having those within your community, with your neighbors, that doesn't mean like saying to your neighbor, like, what did you do in bed last night? You know, but just creating that space where it's okay to talk about, even talk about like, oh, what books are you reading? What, you know, sexy books are you reading? I think that that's fascinating to me. So I've been kind of studying that topic a lot, and I'm curious what's going to happen with the movie and when the movie comes out and what rating it's going to have. And I think that kind of is this watershed moment in our culture where sex and BDSM have broken through to the mainstream and, you know, can no longer be topics where it's like, oh, well, it's only people who are, you know, in this one, whatever stereotypes there are about people who practice BDSM, like I think that we've kind of started to break those down and you can't just say, oh, well, it's people who wear this kind of thing and go to these kind of parties. It's people, your neighbors doing it in their home in the suburbs and people, you know, and not to malign people who are part of, you know, who are dressing up and living that lifestyle full time. Like, I think that I hope that the success of it has brought more empathy and understanding and just openness. Like, and again, like, I think that sometimes people think, oh, well, you have to do it to be okay with other people doing it. And I think that's not true. If that was the case, then I don't think we would be as far as we are. Like, I think we've seen a lot of positive gains. I mean, I think same-sex marriage, I think even just having those conversations, and then, you know, whether we get as far politically as, you know, we might want to, you know, bringing that conversation about what is marriage for and why do we have marriage law? Like, I think starting those conversations and continuing them is something that is important. And I think, again, like, creating space for those conversations to happen within families and neighborhoods is important. And so, like, that's always kind of what I felt like I hope my work is doing. I don't consider myself an expert. I just consider myself someone who's been open about my own sexuality and experiences and created a forum or multiple forums for people to share their stories too.
Beautiful. And I think one of the benefits of global media is we're seeing a transformation of global sex culture and everything that's happening in Egypt around the rape culture there. And, you know, India, we're seeing an acceleration of sex culture transforming more towards one that's safe and healthy for everyone. At least that's my hope. And I hope that your books are reaching people in lots of countries and opening lots of doors around the world.
Thank you.
So last question, and this is a question I like to ask everyone I talk to, how do you envision your ideal sex culture? What would be some of the qualities of Rachel Kramer Bussell's ideal sex culture?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's tough. I mean, I think certainly sex education is somewhere we really need to step up, both in, you know, school children, you know, age appropriately educating, you know, teenagers and, you know, younger people, but also I think extending that especially into college and older. Like, I think this idea that sex education is what happens when you're in school, maybe in college, but then ends, I think we need more sort of to normalize that and normalize the idea that you don't just suddenly know everything because you've gone to college or you've had sex a few times. Like, I think there's this idea that, you know, it's only if you have a sexual problem that you're seeking help for it. And I think that's, you know, not true. And I think, like, some of the things that happen within the BDSM world where there's, you know, education, like, could happen, you know, in other aspects of sexuality in a more comfortable way. I mean, I don't necessarily know how that would happen, but I think that we do have this idea that, you know, once you've had sex or in a few relationships or whatever, you just know everything. You figured it all out. And I think that contributes to some of the shame and confusion when if you don't have it all figured out, you're like, well, what do I do now? People don't necessarily know where to go. And, you know, and I think that there's imperfect tools right now to educate people. And it's not that, you know, people can't learn from erotica or porn or books, but I think that there needs to be more real life, you know, live places where people can go to find out things that they're interested in a non-judgmental and, you know, in a way that lets them know that they're not alone in that. Because I think that that's sort of the biggest thing I see, you know, that people feel like I'm alone in X, you know, whatever issue that I'm dealing with, when probably, I mean, the chances of the only one dealing with that issue are probably zero.
Yeah. Yeah, we offer a free sex advice service at pleasuremechanics.com. People can submit anything, any question, and we get back to them and either write them a personal email or do a podcast or a YouTube video about it. And in almost every question, there's this subtext of, am I normal? Am I a freak? Am I disordered? You know, there's a real sense of isolation when people have a question about their sexuality. And I think that media like this, this podcast, everything you do really helps to make people feel that they're part of a community. Other people have gone through it too, and they're not alone.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I also think that the more I write it and just hear from people around sexuality, I really do see that common thread. Whatever, you know, someone might think, oh, well, I'm into whatever, and someone else is into something totally different or is dealing with a different topic. But I think that they really are all connected by this idea, both this, am I normal? And, you know, this, I just see people as more alike than different overall. And I think that we can, you know, join forces it's not necessarily about identifying around what you do as in terms of as much as sharing common values around wanting everyone to have that space. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and your book, Best Sex Writing 2013, definitely opens up a window into the sex culture that we all share and that we all have a part of creating together. So we definitely recommend grabbing a copy of it, and you'll probably want to go back a few years and grab more copies of Best Sex Writing because these issues really are perennial. And thank you so much for putting these books together and sharing so many ideas about sexuality with the world. It's a real service to us all. Thank you. Clearly, there is so much we can all learn from reading erotica and sex writing of all kinds and having more conversations about sexuality with our friends, families, and lovers. We hope you check out Rachel's books and continue having conversations and thinking about your sexuality for the rest of your life. If you have any questions at all about sexuality, you can submit a question to be answered on future episodes of Speaking of Sex by visiting us at pleasuremechanics.com and going to the Ask Us Anything page. You can also call 302-IN-TOUCH and leave us a voicemail message. Also on our website, you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter for weekly sex advice, exclusive giveaways, and more. You'll also find 8 video guides teaching you how to touch every inch of your lover's body with more skill and confidence. As a listener of the Speaking of Sex podcast, we'd like to offer you 20% off any of the download-to-own videos. Simply use promo code SPEAKINGOFSEX, all one word, on the second page of checkout for a 20% off discount. This is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Thanks for listening. We wish you a lifetime of pleasure. Cheers.